Sarah. Ah, yes, Aretha. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My next guest is Rashad Olison, the former pop music critic for the Baltimore Sun. He's written a memoir that chronicles how music helped him navigate the rough terrain of his childhood. After his parents divorced when he was very young, he and his two sisters moved frequently with their mother as she held multiple jobs trying to provide for the family. As Rashad grew up, he struggled with adjusting to a barrage of new schools, as well as the isolation that he felt because he was gay. He turned to music and to literature for comfort, inspiration, and hope. The book is called Soul Serenade, Rhythm, Blues, and Coming of Age Through Vinyl. Rashad Olison joins me on the phone from his home in Virginia Beach. Good morning, Rashad. How you doing?
I'm fine. You know, I'm actually right here in D.C. I have a reading tonight. I'm in my hotel.
Oh, terrific. All right. Well, I'm glad you're safe and warm in this rainy Wednesday morning. So you grew up in rural Arkansas, Hot Springs, Little Rock, and you talk about how the neighbors could be identified by the music they played. So it sounds like music was a constant soundtrack to you when you were a little kid.
Oh, absolutely. Music was almost like another relative. You know, it was such a strong presence in the community. In the summertime in the projects, and even when the weather was warm, it didn't have to necessarily be summer, people would pull their big stereo speakers out on the porch, or you could always hear music blaring in the park nearby, and you knew who was up or you knew whose house it was by what was coming out. So it defined for me that time, that place, and the neighbors and family members who were around.
Tell us about your family. You had two sisters, Dusa and Reagan. Tell us about them and your mom and another character in your life, Mama Tea Cake.
Well, yeah, I grew up with my two sisters, Dusa, who's she's about 9 years older than I am, and she was something of like a second mother growing up. While I was writing this book, I didn't realize how young she was, with all the responsibilities she had. My mother worked 2 full-time jobs, so my oldest sister was pretty much like another parent in the house after my folks divorced. My sister Reagan is 1 year and 5 days younger than I am, so we were very close in age, and, you know, running buddies growing up and sort of had each other's back and still do in a way. I mean, our lives are very different now. They're still in Arkansas, well-adjusted, married with children. They're very, you know, suburban lives, and in fact, Dusa has grandchildren. Her children are grown now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, given the type of childhood we came out of, it's great to see how well adjusted we are. And Mama Tea Cake is no longer with us. She's an interesting character in the book in that she's not the stereotypical grandmotherly figure. She absolutely was not. She was a bootlegger. She had been an abandoned child too, and so that was one of the things in writing the book that I noticed in the family, this pattern of abandonment, be it emotional or physical or both, and how those scars run very deep, and how they color how we see each other and how we go through life.
Tell us about your dad. When he was drafted and served in Vietnam, and when he came back from Vietnam, he was a very different person, and then your mom and dad finally divorced when you were about 6 years old.
Yeah, absolutely. He was raised in a very close-knit family. He was raised on East Section Line, this road in Malvern, Arkansas, that was probably the most rural part of Malvern. There's, you know, plenty of gardens and all of that, and he couldn't go 2 doors down without, you know, family members being everywhere. So he was surrounded by family, very sheltered. He was drafted in Vietnam after high school, and he had never left Malvern. So he had gone from Malvern to Vietnam, the shelter boy, and was completely traumatized over there. He was trained as a sniper, and he had a nervous breakdown and was addicted to heroin and was dishonorably discharged. And, you know, I was born in 1977, so about 7 years, well, 4 years after he'd come back. And from all accounts, he was never the same. You know, he was always addicted to something after that. And in writing about him, he was a very complex guy. I mean, very affectionate, very emotionally available to us, but so troubled. and the opposite of my mother, who was emotionally distant. But in writing about him, I realized that, you know, those psychological problems he had, you know, had gone untreated, and of course, eventually got the best of him. He died at 45, and, you know, I missed him a lot. You know, he fostered my love for music. And,
yeah, it was his record collection that first got you turned on to music.
That's right.
And you write, you know, really eloquently about some of the tunes that were really important to you. Describe for us the reverence with which your first grade classmates greeted your show-and-tell presentation of Michael Jackson's Thriller. That's a great scene in the book.
You know, I was a shy kid and very lonely, and so no one noticed me in class. I was always in the back, and it was show-and-tell, and I was so proud of that record. It had been out about a year, but that record was big on the charts for a good 2 years. And so it was at the peak of its popularity. I had the album, took to school. Everybody noticed me, and everybody was like, oh, he got the Thriller album. And my teacher put it on, and the class morphed into this little elementary disco. And I was a popular kid just for that day. Everybody, you know, started ignoring me the next day, but I was, king of the hill that day.
Here's another woman that had a great impact on your young life.
Mm-hmm.
Chaka Khan, you write, I could close my eyes and become nothing. I could exhale and surrender to a woman who tamed lions in her backyard and kept a full moon somewhere in her purse. Mm-hmm. Chaka Khan. But this book really was a way of your processing and thinking about these traumatic events that happened to you as a kid.
Absolutely. The music provided a sense of refuge and solace. Even when I didn't understand the lyrics, I understood that the performance conveyed a strength and a resilience that I wanted to embody. When I discovered Chaka Khan and Daddy's Records, I was around maybe the fourth grade, and that's around the time I was being bullied. And the way she sang, the way she wailed, to me just sounded like defiance. She sounded like another, just otherworldly to me in a way. And I said, you know what? It wasn't that I wanted to be her, but I wanted to embody what that sound was like, to stand in who I was, whoever that was going to be. And so listening to her, people like Gladys Knight, and of course Aretha Franklin, and Bobby Womack and David Ruffin, this mixture of strength and vulnerability, I wanted to embody that somehow.
Well, it's a very interesting read, and I appreciate your time this morning, and have a good trip to Baltimore tomorrow when you have an event. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Rashad Ollison, his new memoir is called Soul Serenade, Rhythm, Blues, and Coming of Age Through Vinyl. Rashad Ollison will be speaking about the book tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Maryland State Library for the Blind and Physically Handicapped on Park Avenue at Franklin Street in Baltimore. It's part of the Enoch Pratt Library's Writers Live series. That's it for us today. On Friday, a conversation about the role of Islam in the African-American community here in Baltimore. President Obama is coming to Catonsville today to visit the Islamic Center of Baltimore. We'll talk about that visit, and we'll also get our annual Oscar prognostications from our movie mavens, Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday. The Oscars this year, once again, not nominating any actors of color. We'll talk about that and about the future of the Academy Awards. That's all coming up Friday morning on Maryland Morning. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.